And good Wednesday morning, live from our KGGF studios here in downtown Coffeyville. I'm Sam Speck. Glad you're with us, as it is a Wednesday. So we're joined in studio by K-State Research and Extension offices, as kind of looks like you guys have a boxing microphone coming down from the ceiling. I apologize. It is Jacob Weber and Wendy Powell sharing a microphone. Jacob, Wendy, good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you guys both in here in studio with us, talking a little bit on behalf of K-State Research and Extension offices throughout. Well, I think a great place to start is a great, you know, just easy enough look outside right now. Lots of wet weather. And with that, what do we usually expect when it comes, especially with an abundance of rain that we saw yesterday? I think close to 2 inches is what we saw. Jacob, what do you usually get out of that?
A lot of places for the ducks to swim.
Exactly. I saw some places in the middle of the street for the ducks to swim yesterday. I mean, that was crazy.
Well, it's a little bit wet to get out in the garden now, that's for sure. So, and of course, we talked about Cedar Rapid Rust last week, and this is perfect weather for Cedar Rapid Rust. The blooms are on the cedar trees, what one fellow said. The cedar trees are blooming. And if you ever seen, of course, you picked it up last week, pictures of the cedar apple rust galls on the cedar trees, they're bright orange. And, of course, what they're doing is they're pumping out a lot of spores. They're going to land on susceptible apple trees. Now, I use that word susceptible because that is one of the strategies that we can use to minimize the effects of cedar apple rust on the negative effects on cedar apple rust on apple trees, is by planting resistant varieties, those that are less likely to become infected and develop those lesions that result in the loss of chlorophyll, which results in the loss of energy within the tree and results in poor apple production, poor quality apple fruits, and a weakened tree and a more susceptibility to other issues. So that's one of the things we promote, planting for planting orchards. Use a good resistant varieties in your selection. And also, if you do have a susceptible tree, you got two options. You eliminate all the cedar trees within a 5-mile radius of your house or your orchard. That's not a good option because it may make the neighbors unhappy. Some of them, and some of them would be very pleased if you did that. The other option is to use protective fungicide sprays, and there's a very limited opportunity with that. There's only really one fungicide that's readily available that has any efficacy, and I wouldn't say if it's even readily available, that's Immunox, so you have to really hunt for that. I may have to order it online or something like that. Immunox also comes in formulations that are labeled for turf grass. You have to be very careful because the turf grass formulation is not labeled for fruit trees. And in that case, it contains material that is unacceptable for human consumption. So that being said, get away from the apple trees. Anthracnose, we talked about sycamore anthracnose last week. Anthracnose also occurs on maple trees and elm trees and ash trees. And some of the effects, like on ash, anthracnose can cause defoliation. And on sycamore trees, definitely defoliation and shoot blight. On maple trees, it oftentimes results in lesions. Deformed leaves on the lesions and deformed leaves on the tree, and maybe some loss of leaf tissue, but doesn't usually result too much in that. It just causes some unusual looking leaves and gets people concerned. And of course, the question is, do we need to spray for that disease? Well, it's way too late to even put on any type of fungicide, because to have any efficacy, that means effect, a positive or a beneficial effect, it would have to be applied prior to bud swell. Oops, we're way past that.
Yeah, way past that point.
Yeah, and then it's not worth it, because in all cases, anthracnose is an early springtime disease, and by midsummer the trees are fully recovered and you have absolutely no lingering effects on the tree at all, so it has no serious issue for the tree's health.
So lots of what sounds like, you know, obviously when it comes to this type of weather, moisture, damp, dark, a lot of areas, a lot of fungus is potential to build up and things like that around the trees. I know we've hit on a lot of times with that cedar apple rust and things. Is there really, you know, any other fungal or things like that that we need to be too concerned right now, or is that kind of the main one, especially for our region?
Those are the main ones right now, because we're a little bit early on tomatoes, but with the wet weather like this, and some gardeners already have tomatoes up and growing pretty good, there are the leaf blights on tomatoes, and there's various control measures, there's a management plan for this. One of them is sanitation. Definitely the disease can overwinter on infected plant debris. It does not overwinter in soil particles. It's overwinters in infected plant debris. So a good thorough cleaning of the garden every fall, destroy infected plant debris or work it into the compost pile, bury it deep so it decomposes quickly. So that substrate can no longer support the fungus. And then plant disease-free plants, maintain good air circulation, avoid overhead spring irrigation, and mulch the soil to provide a barrier between any debris that's in the soil and the plants. That still doesn't stop the disease, because the spores are airborne, and there's a lot of alternate hosts available. So we typically see leaf blights developing during periods of extended wet weather, and so a fungicide spray, protective fungicide spray, is very beneficial, and a really good material to use is the chlorothalonil type fungicides. They're readily available in various brand names. Follow label directions. You apply it as a protectant. It needs to be reapplied every 10 to 14 days during the infection period, which I would say in our area extends from now until about mid-June. And beyond that, you probably don't need to apply it anymore, because when we get in the drier part of the summer, infection is less likely. If you do have serious infection, they can continue throughout the summer and into the fall and end up with bare-legged tomatoes. So that's one of the issues that we probably want to get on top of here fairly soon, begin your fungicide spray on your tomato plants here when they start getting fully developed, mature leaves, the first leaves that reach full size.
Yeah, can't forget about that. You know, if you're going to make those preliminary actions, you got to do it before, exactly. You can't just wait for right in the middle of season.
We have a couple of different type of fungicides, and this is a protectant fungicide. In other words, that's be put on before infection. There are some eradicant type fungicides that can be put on within 72 hours of infection. And those have a little bit kickback effect, but there's very few of those materials that really are available for homeowners. So, again, the best thing to do is put on the protective fungicide. I recommend chlorothalonil because it has a zero-day pre-harvest interval for tomatoes, 0 day. You can harvest tomatoes as soon as the fungicide dries. You just wash it off.
Well, plenty of water out there, you know, these last couple of days as well. And Wendy, I know you wanted to kind of hit on right now the, you know, the difference of available clean water as well. So, Wendy, give me your thoughts on that.
Well, there certainly is lots of water out there. And something that livestock owners need to be putting some thought into is the availability of clean water. A lot of pet owners have already pushed past this issue, and they know all about that. But livestock owners, sometimes, you know, there's creeks running full, there's ponds that are overflowing. And so what are your livestock actually drinking? Are they getting some good water out of that? Or something else to consider would be the integrity of those water bodies. So whenever cattle or horses or even smaller ruminants like sheep and goats are walking down those banks, they could be damaging those pond dams or stream banks. So that's something to consider whenever we talk about water sources for livestock.
Gotcha. And then, you know, is there any actions that you would suggest or something? Because obviously when it becomes this rainy, when it comes this, like you said, the banks, those areas probably soften up as well. I mean, it's probably not as easy and probably expensive as well to throw up a fence. But is there a way to avoid really your cattle or other livestock from, you know, kind of coming around there? Or
sure. So a lot of producers these days are fencing ponds okay. and putting drain, not necessarily drain pipes, but lines through the dam. And putting water tanks on the back side of a dam to allow livestock to drink. And it's also, whenever it's this wet, hooves will damage the ground everywhere they walk. And so sometimes it's nice to have a pasture that you can put animals, or a dry lot where you can put animals where they are not damaging your pasture that you're wanting to put them in all summer, or somewhere where you can protect the ground a little bit because... A lot of producers have to keep in mind that livestock, yes, that might be what you're taking to market, but your livelihood also comes from pastures.
Absolutely, yeah, and I'm sure there is probably some ways that you guys have maybe to test that water as well and kind of see the conditions of it or something like that. I know there's some preliminary. I'd like to get more into this as well, available clean water around your pastures, as well as more from Jacob Weber, as Wendy Pell and Jacob Weber joining us here in studio this morning. Again, you can listen back to any of these interviews on our website at the underneath the community tab at kggfradio.com. For now, we will set it off to the top of the hour news break, but we'll continue this conversation in just a second with Jacob and Wendy here on AM 690 KGGF.